I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Welcome to Talk is Jericho, the pod of thunder and rock and roll. And I'm sure you know by now that Christian Cage is all elite. And it's Friday, which means it's time for Duff McKagan's joke of the week.
Chris Jericho, Duff McKagan calling you. Hey, listen, I was going to write a joke about that boat stuck in the Suez Canal, but that ship has sailed. Thank you very much. Goodbye.
That's a good one. Duff is on top of the news of the day. Would expect that. I'm sure you guys are laughing too. I love Duff, and thanks to him for delivering without fail every single Friday. And thanks to everyone who joined the Winnipeggers last night for another hilarious, ridiculous live show, the April Fool Improv Invitational with special guests Teddy Irvin and Tommy Chong from Cheech and Chong. And of course, Dave and Rybo and I did some improv comedy, drew some pictures, did some singing competitions. It's ridiculous. If you didn't see it last night, it's fine. You can find it forever on my Facebook page and my YouTube channel. And we'll be back with a new Winnipeggers episode next Thursday at 9 p.m. Eastern. Again, that's my Facebook page and my YouTube channel. Go check it out now. All right, let's go to today's guest. As I mentioned, Christian Cage is all elite. He was the surprise contract signing at the AEW Revolution pay-per-view. He just had his first match on Dynamite this past Wednesday. He got in the ring with Frankie Kazarian, had a great match. It had been 7 years since he was forced to retire from wrestling due to concussion issues. You hear all about his long journey back to pro wrestling, including his surprise appearance at this year's Royal Rumble and why he didn't stay with WWE. He talks about the conversations he had with Jon Moxley, Tony Khan, that made him decide to come to AEW, how he was able to keep his debut a surprise, why outwork everyone is more than just a catchphrase, and what he hopes to accomplish in this final chapter of his in-ring career. We talk about our own wrestling history when we were tag partners at WWE, our main event match at WrestleMania 20. So much to talk about with one of my best friends in the business, Christian Cage, returning to Talk is Jericho right now. So a lot of surprises here in AEW, and it was kind of a 1-2 punch because it was the surprise announcement that Paul White was coming to AEW, which I did know about, and then the surprise announcement of Christian Cage coming to AEW, which I did not really know about, which is funny because still one of my closest friends in the business.
Sorry to do it to you. It was and the funny thing is I was at your house a couple months previous. It's so weird, right? How sometimes like you said, you're one of my best friends, not only in the business, but like in life.
In life,
But like somehow through the craziness of this past year, you know, you just kind of not lose touch, but it's like, you know,
lose contact.
You know, I mean, like, and you're working still, and like it was, you know, and I was in my head trying to get ready to come back, which like maybe a couple people knew about. But when we were sitting out there talking, and you know, you had asked me straight up. At that point, you know, we were talking a lot about AEW and just the business in general and things like that, and just catching up like we do. And you had asked me, "Hey, do you ever get thinking about coming back? Could you get cleared?" And I kind of lied to you. I said, "No, I don't." But this was the reason why. And I talked to you about this after. Was I had gone on my own and done the testing, but I hadn't gone to Pittsburgh and done the other portion of the testing that would legitimately get me cleared. And I didn't want to jinx it and be like, "Yeah, I'm coming back," and then go up there and I fail it. And they're like, "No, you can't come back." And then it's like, I kind of look like an idiot.
Right.
So it's like, and also it's like, oh, if I just don't tell anybody, if nothing happens, I don't really, like, you know, it was just one of those things where I didn't want to jinx it in a sense. I'm very superstitious that way.
Well, it's funny because your name had come up a few times, just, you know, when we're putting together our new company, and then we had kind of the core guys. And then once it became a thing, you know, we were able to, you know, we had Moxley come jump aboard, and then, you know, and Matt Hardy comes and FDR comes, and there's always, you know, always an eye out, and there's always certain guys, and one of them was Christian. Like, I wonder what he's got going on.
Yeah.
Like you said, time flies so much when you're not on the road together. Like, we hadn't seen each other, I don't think, for like almost 2 or 3 years or at least hung out.
It had been at least a year, year and a half.
Actually, yeah, hung out, yeah, and had a had a meal or a drink or whatever. And it's funny how the moment you see each other again, it's like not a day
like,
has passed.
Like I saw you the day before. Yeah,
yeah, exactly, exactly. Yeah. So when we were talking, I was like, I wonder what's going on with him, because you look like you're in great shape. You never change. I mean, you look pretty much exactly the same as you did 10 years ago.
Yeah, well, I'm actually in better shape now, I think, than I was 10 years ago, to be honest with you. And but that year and a half I didn't see you, I was not in good shape.
Right.
And like I said, this year, the year was tough on everybody, but it was like, I was happily living that retired life, you know?
And had you actually accepted, like, I'm retired?
Yeah, I 100% in my head thought that I was retired. And, you know, you're always trying, you know, you're always, you know, for all those years, you're at barbecues and you're at family functions or whatever it is. And you're like, oh, you know, I just got to eat the grilled chicken breast and a salad. And, you know, everybody else is eating like double cheeseburgers and sausages and cake. And you're just like, your mouth's watering. And you're like, well,
you're not even at the barbecues at all. Yeah. You're working, right?
And so it was like, it was one of those things where I said, when I retire, when I legit retire, you know, I'll always work out and all those sorts of things because I enjoy doing it. It's kind of an escape, right? But it's, I'm going to, enjoy these other things. Like I'm not gonna, I'm just gonna eat what I want and those and all that kind of stuff.
I eat what I want.
but I was doing that. And but like when the whole lockdown thing happened, you know, the gyms shut down and I just kind of stopped working out. You know, I had some like resistance bands and I was doing some half ass like resistance band workout in the garage, maybe go for a run here and there. But like anybody, you kind of go into a little bit of
a little funk.
Like you can't do anything. Yeah. And I would start doing walks around my neighborhood in the evening just to get out of the house, you know, like with headphones on and listen to music and just go for a little stroll around the neighborhood or whatever. And but yeah, so when it came around that I was really going to try this, or when I got that clearance, I was like, man, I better put the work in here. Like I can't just go to either WWE or AEW and say, hey, guess what? I got cleared. If you give me a job, I'll get back
then
I'll get in shape.
Yeah,
yeah. Right. You gotta do the work first. And hey, this is what you get. You know,
that's right.
So I was looking at it from that mentality. I kind of invested in myself and my health from that moment going forward.
What was it? Just to kind of refresh the memory. What was it that caused you? I know, like you got the match, not the match, but what was it exactly the way you had to retire? Head trauma?
Yeah, it was concussions. And it was just kind of, I guess, the frequency at the time that I was getting them. And yeah, I just think that because there was so much in the media and so much of that stuff going on, that maybe they were being a little bit overcautious with how it was being handled. And I'm not sure, maybe I didn't get enough time to fully rest after that kind of last one before. I'm not sure exactly how it all worked. And I can't look at it that way anyway. Like I know that, you know, WWE had my best interest in mind at that time. I get that. And but they medically disqualified me, and that's what it was. And I didn't question it. You know, obviously I want to have a long, fruitful life, and wanted to be able to communicate with my daughter and have conversations with her when she got older. So I wasn't going to try and push it, although it never really sat right with me the way that it ended. So I just kind of accepted it as what it was and said, okay, what's the next chapter in my life? And I just kind of moved on and started doing these other things to keep busy and try to find that creative outlet, because, you know, we're creative people.
Sure.
You know, we're artists and we want to create, and you just find other outlets to do that. And that's what I tried to do and was, you know, was pretty successful at. And, but, you know, in the back of my mind, I'm a wrestler. You know, it's what I feel like it's what I was born to do. And it was hard for me even like to kind of get back in it, as far as, you know, people ask me, why weren't you an agent? Why aren't you a producer? You know, you have so much to get back. It's hard to get that close to it when
it was taken away from you.
You know, it was hard to get that close. Yeah. And
it wasn't your decision.
Yeah. And I think that if it was my decision and it was like, okay, this is my time to step away, it would have been easier to step into that kind of role. And, you know, I never minded having conversations with anybody or anybody wanted to call or talk or mentor anybody or help anybody with advice or anything like that on matches and things like that. They could always call me, but like, I was not one of those things where I actively wanted to go and like sit in meetings and do that kind of thing and just get myself that close to it.
It's interesting because around the same time frame, Daniel Bryan goes down, Edge goes down, and you and Edge have such parallel lives and careers. It's so funny. And all three of you, I mean, Brian came back a few years ago, but the same thing, you can never come back. And suddenly he goes above and beyond to come back. And then you and Adam do the same thing.
Right. Well, Adam's injury was different than myself and Daniel Bryan's. And, you know, I had a couple conversations with Daniel about it. But, you know, also, you know, I think he's probably, 10 years younger than me, I would say.
Probably at least a good 7 for sure.
You know, so I was like thinking too, like I was about to turn 40 when it happened. And, you know, I'd kind of accomplished everything at that point in time that I wanted to accomplish, except headline WrestleMania. And, you know, Daniel Bryan was just kind of starting on his journey,
right?
You know, to, you know, at that point in time. So it was probably harder for him to accept that it was over at that point in time, being as young as he was. Whereas for me, I was a lot closer to the finish line, or so I thought at that point.
Right.
And so I just kind of, like I said, accepted it for what it was. And then when I went back to do the unsanctioned match with Randy this past summer, it was one of those things. You're on the non-contact list, so we need to be careful of this. You need to be careful of that. You can't have this kind of contact, yada, yada, yada. And I was like, really? Am I that fragile? Like, I feel great. Why is this such an issue? And then I just started thinking, like, well, Adam got cleared. I know it's a different injury, but like...
His was neck related.
Yeah, but it's like, he never thought he was going to be able to come back. Mm. Who's to say that they won't clear me at this point in time? It's been 7 years. So I made my own appointments and just went on my own and figured if I go and they tell me that they think I can do this, then I've opened up doors. And if they say, nope, you should probably stay retired, then I'm in no different situation than I was when I woke up in the morning. So... That's what I did. I went to the University of South Florida and saw a specialist there, and I went through the physical training, went through the testing on the computer, and
like with the shapes and the concussion
all
testing,
all those sorts of things. And they even said that the testing had advanced some since I took it last. And when I sat in with the doctor after I did all the tests, and he was like, "Man, your test scores were great. You were average or above average on everything. You didn't fail. You weren't below average on any of these scores. Your physical tests were great. So let's have a conversation." So we started talking, and you know, eventually we got to the point. Like, he asked me, "What is it that you want to do?" And I said, "I would like to go back and finish my career on my own terms, but I'm obviously not going to do it if it's going to put my health at risk."
Right.
And he said, "I think you can do this. I don't think you're thinking rationally at all. Like, from everything that we've talked about, all these test scores, everything's laid out here, you can do this if it's what you want to do." And that was like, wow. Like, I mean, pretty surreal moment.
Mm-hmm.
And so I walked out of there feeling pretty good about myself, and then realizing, well, now the work has just kind of started, because I need to get back in shape here. So I hired a nutrition company here in Tampa called Nutrition Solutions. Mm-hmm. And it's funny, because I thought I knew something about dieting, and I really knew nothing. And Chris Cavallini, who owns Nutrition Solutions, Edge had put me in touch with him, and we had some conversations. And you know, he's like, I'd never met him, and he's like, "Well, what kind of shape are you in?" I was like, "Well, I'm not in like bad shape." I said, "I guess put it like this, you know, if you're at a dad's pool party, I might have the best dad bod at the pool party, you know, or at least top three." Yeah. So he was like, he's like, "All right." So I just explained to him what I was looking to do. And then he started, you know, kind of piecing together a little meal plan for me on when to eat and the portions and all that sort of thing. And it just, he couldn't drill this into my head more. Consistency is the key. You just have to be consistent. So I was like, "All right." And from that moment on, I was sold. Actually, not from that moment on, because we had that conversation. And then I was like, I was passing a Five Guys burger joint. I stopped and got a double cheeseburger, because he's like, "You're starting tonight." And I was like, "Well, I better get this cheeseburger out of my system now." So I did that. And then, he had meals delivered to me that afternoon, and we kind of went from there. And, so from then, you know, you're in the middle of this pandemic, and you know, they just kind of started opening the gyms again. And I went to the gym with a mask on, but I was super paranoid. Like I couldn't concentrate on working out. I was too, nervous of people getting like too close to me.
Right.
I felt like I was always looking over my shoulder, and I was like, I can't work out like this. I need to do something else. So I built just a tiny gym in my garage, just put minimal equipment in there, and just went back to basics and started doing basic movements. And in the summertime in Florida, in that garage, it was over 100 degrees, and I was sweating, and it was almost like mentally preparing myself like to just get in that zone where you're just, it's kind of a fight with yourself, a struggle with yourself. And that's kind of how I was looking at it. It was like me versus that heat. And that's how I would stay out there and finish these workouts. And I just loved it. I really enjoyed the solitude of just going in my garage and working out alone and just focusing on getting back. And like nobody kind of knew this. And it was, it was exciting to me that what the possibilities, what doors could open up from this. And it just made me go out there every day and just bust my ass and put the work in. So I did that for months and just kind of went from there.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Just to go back to what you said with the unsanctioned match with Randy, that was on Raw what, a year ago, whatever it was, or whatever.
It was the summertime,
Did that give you any type of inspiration and motivation? Because that did a really big number.
It did.
Big rating.
It was part of it as well. And then after when you know, I saw that the rating was, I think at the time it was the best rating they'd done since the post-WrestleMania Raw or something like that. And I was like,
this is where you were supposed to have a match against Randy.
Right, yeah.
And they built it up all the show.
Yeah.
And then he beat you and punched you or whatever.
I was like, man, people like were really interested to see if I was actually going to have a match. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, then I kind of let them down by not having a match, you know? And it was like, not that it was a really cool angle and like it served its purpose and did what it was supposed to do for Randy and Edge. But at the flip side of that is people would obviously be excited if I came back. Mm-hmm. So that coupled with the other things that we talked about earlier really made me want to go and do this.
It's funny talking about being on the no contact list and people that don't know is there's kind of a list of everybody who's on the roster. Mm-hmm. And here's the Raw guys, here's SmackDown, here's injured, here's no contact. Yep. And no contact is like Sergeant Slaughter. I remember Mick Foley was on there. One time I remember we had a house show in Rochester. He was the ref. And I wanted him to give me the socko, and they said he's on the no contact. He can't even give me a socko.
Right.
No.
Yep.
It's very, very strict. So like you said, to see yourself on there, like you're not nothing. I mean, Sarge is probably in his 70s, and Mick has been through the wars and is probably 10 years older as well. You're probably thinking like, I'm not that fragile. There's no way I feel like that.
Yeah, that's exactly what I felt. And that's why I went and did the testing and all those sorts of things. And then, you know, I brought it to WWE's attention that I was had got this clearance, and obviously they're very excited about it, and was told they wanted to keep it close to the vest, quiet, and quietly sent me up to Pittsburgh, I believe, towards the end of October. They sent me up there, and same thing. I just went through
test with Dr. Maroon and those.
Yeah, but it was a harder test. It was more thorough test, and it was probably about 5 hours long. To be honest, and I saw about three or four different specialists for different things. Went through, did a full like in the gym work, like physical workout. So it was very, very thorough. And the doctor said the same thing as the doctor here at USF said, exact same thing. But one thing I found interesting that he said was, "Did you find yourself when you were getting concussed more? Did you find yourself getting anxious and thinking about it a lot?" And I said, "Of course, yeah." I was like, "You're wondering why this is happening to you." And he said, "I need you to stop thinking about concussions." And he said, if you have that anxiety and that fear, you're making yourself more susceptible to it, which I didn't even realize.
Wow.
He said, "You need to go step in that ring with no fear, and you need to step in there with the realization that you're at no greater risk now than you've ever been at any point in your life of getting a concussion. Could you get another one? Sure. But you're not at any greater risk than you were at any other point in your life."
Gotcha.
So go in there with every confidence that you're going to be fine. Because if you go in there with that anxiety and that fear, you're making yourself more susceptible. Yeah. And that's all I had to hear.
Manifesting.
Yeah.
So it's surprising to me that then now that you're cleared and you're 100% and you get brought back into the Royal Rumble, but you're not on paper, as we say, you're not under contract.
Yeah. Well, I think that was kind of a misconception for a long time that I was, because I had done so much stuff with WWE still and
Fox.
Yeah, well, the Fox deal was a separate deal from WWE, but I'd always just kind of been around and done different things, and I was just kind of on a nightly.
They paid for the nightly.
Yeah. I was never under a contract. So I just think that maybe because I was still always around that people just assumed that that was the case. But yeah, obviously it wasn't. So
tell us about the Royal Rumble then. How did that come about?
Yeah. So the, so I'll backtrack a little bit more, even going back further. So when I got that clearance, like I said, mid pandemic, everything shut down. Adam had a ring up at his house in North Carolina. And so I talked to him and I said, hey, why don't I just drive up there for a few days and I'm going to get in the ring to see how I feel. And this is before I even really started working out. Like literally had just gotten my clearance like a week or two before. So I went up there and I got in the ring for about 45 minutes to an hour.
Just the two of you guys or by yourself?
No, Adam was hurt. So it was myself and Beth. Oh. Beth was beating me up. And so we didn't really do a match or anything like that, but I just took some bumps and just hit the ropes and just kind of rolled around and did a few things, just got the feel for it. And I was like winded and sore and banged up. And like my body, like just from that, you know, not your body kind of builds up like a
callus.
Yeah. Callus, you know, from all that repetition of taking bumps and things like that. And all that had been gone obviously for not doing it for 7 years. So my neck was sore. My shoulders were a little sore. Felt it for a little while after. And then I started on the training and the diet. In my head, I was like, I'm not going to get back in the ring because I need to get myself physically where I want to be. And if I'm in the ring, I risk, you know, jamming a shoulder or getting hurt, and that sets the other part back. So why don't I get myself in the place physically where I want to be, and then I'll have plenty of time to get back in the ring. And, you know, I'll probably have like maybe a month or 2 months notice, and I can just get in there at that point, just get the reps in, right? So I was solely focused on getting back in shape, not so much the in-ring part. So all these months pass and yeah, we get through the holidays and I'd heard a little bit of a rumbling of maybe something in the Rumble, but then like, no, it's not going to happen. And that was probably a month out. So just didn't really think about it again. And then, yeah, the Rumble was on the Sunday night and Friday night about 7:30 PM, I get a phone call saying, we don't think there's a big enough surprise in this Rumble. Would you want to come back and do it? And I thought about it for like a second and all the things kind of go through your head. Well, you know, I don't have any kind of deal or anything like that. And it's like, you know what? I've always bet on myself anyway. And I hadn't legit hadn't been in the ring since June when I was at Edge's place. And before that, it had been 7 years. Jeez. So I was like, well, hopefully it's like riding a bike and I'll just pick it right back up. So what I did was, and then they had, you know, they obviously have rings backstage at the, you know, at different areas.
Yeah, pay-per-views.
Yeah. So I was like, maybe I'll be able to sneak in a ring and just hit the ropes and this and that. And like, but there was people in those rings all day. So I couldn't even do it because I'm surprised, right? So legit, I didn't get changed till like the match before the Rumble was in. And I got changed, walked out, and everybody in the hall was like, oh my God.
Was it the one where you're hiding in the bus or something?
I know, I wasn't even in the bus. Yeah, I was just there hanging out for the day because it was not it's not out of the realm of possibility for me to be there. Yeah, because I was there like 3 weeks previous doing some stuff for the network. So it's not like I'm not around. So people are used to seeing me around and then, oh, are we going to see you tonight? Like, and then they're like, kind of laugh it off, you know, and then, you know, walk out.
You always change by yourself like in a shower or something anyways.
So I walk in, and I was like, oh my God. And then, so when the match actually started, I knew I'd have about 40, 45 minutes before I had to be in there. I got in the ring, hit the ropes about five times, took about five bumps just to get that shock, that initial shock in your system. And I was like, all right, that's going to have to do it.
Wow.
So, and then I went out there and did it. And
how was it for you going out there? Hadn't been in the ring 7 years, and you go out in front of cyber fans in the Thunderdome.
Well, it was obviously not the same, but it was still cool because you could still see faces on the...
Hear them.
You could more so see faces on the screen than you could with a live crowd.
Oh, I see.
You know?
Yeah.
But there's noise and you could see the reactions of the people on the screens, which was cool. It was definitely... You know, I'd done a couple of things in the Performance Center, obviously, with that unsanctioned match where it's super weird, where there's nothing
there.
And it's strange. Yeah. But it was as good of an environment as you possibly could put without an actual crowd being there. So I appreciated that. And it was a good feeling. Like it felt great. Mm-hmm. And I thought I was going to be nervous before I walked that curtain. I stood there and I was cool as a cucumber, man. Like I was like...
All comes back.
I was like, I was born to do this. Like, I mean, there's nothing to be nervous about. Like I put the work in other than getting in the ring. But it was like, It was like, yeah. And it wasn't like going out and having a singles match. You know, the Rumble, it's a different kind of animal. So went out there and thankfully it went good and got a lot of positive feedback. People saying, you know, you look like you never missed a step, which was great. And that gave me some more confidence and just kind of rolled from there.
Did you talk to, was Vince there that day?
He was not there that day.
Did you ever see him?
I never saw him again after that. No.
Wow. All right, Christian Cage, how does your journey lead you to AEW?
Well, I was kind of, it's funny because, you know, I'm obviously, we just talked about it, close friends with you. And you, when I was at your place, we were talking a lot about the business and you were talking to me a lot about AEW and your experiences there and with Tony and the young roster and just the you know, the differences. You know, there's differences. And Moxley is also a very good friend of mine. And he and I had been chatting, especially after Rumble. We talked a lot. And, you know, he was right. He's a smart guy.
Yeah.
He's a really smart guy.
He chooses his words wisely, too.
And
he's not there just saying stuff to hear himself talk.
And so he kind of said to me, he's like, hey, man, he's like, you hold all the cards here. You know, you're a free agent. And he's like, you'd be doing yourself a disservice if you don't explore all your options. Like, why not have at least have a conversation with Tony while you can?
Right. Which makes perfect sense.
Yeah. And I was like, you know what? This is the last chapter of my career. Like, I should have the best platform for me at this stage, not only for myself, but to help the next generation step up. And, you know, I don't know everything, but I feel like I know a lot. And I see matches different than other people do, putting matches together and things like that. Maybe some of that knowledge will trickle down as well and give people a different perspective when they're putting stuff together. So where am I going to be able to best pass that on as well as give myself the platform to step up and kind of have this last chapter? And I'd had some talks with WWE and things like that. And there was nothing really solidified as far as, you know, there were some things batted around just creatively and things like that, but nothing set in stone.
Is it with Karana you're talking to? Or
no, just different people.
Writers or whatever?
Yeah. No, I talked to Bruce quite a bit.
Gotcha.
And things like that. And I did have some conversations with Karana towards the end and very cordial. Everything was fine. And I was sitting after having that conversation with John, I was sitting here the next day just kind of taking in. I just texted him. I was like, you're right. I said, tell Tony if he wants to talk. I'd love to have a conversation with him. And an hour later, Tony texts me, and like the next day, we connected, and we talked for 2 hours. Mm. And during that call, he talked to me and told me all the things that he thought that I could bring to the table and how I could help this show, this company. And I was telling him the things that I thought that I could bring to the table. And the thing that I took away the most, more than anything, is that he's a genuinely good person.
Yes.
And I appreciated that so much. Mm-hmm. And that goes a long way with me. So more than anything, he sold me on him as a person. I'd met him years previous through Chris Nowinski. We had a dinner one night and hung out for 3-4 hours. And
kind of like, oh, that was that same guy.
Yeah, but he was talking to me about things about my career that I don't even remember. This guy's an encyclopedia of wrestling. Like he knows his shit. And so we talked and then he's like, well, give me a couple days and then we'll kind of reconnect. And then so we did that, and then we talked again. I can't remember what day of the week that was, but then we talked again on a Saturday in the afternoon. We had a chat, and then I'll email you something a little bit later. And I was like, okay. And then midnight, I'm about to get in bed, midnight, my phone rings and it's Tony, and I answer, and he's like, hey man, you want to just talk? And just like, I want you here. Do you want to be here? I was like, yeah, I do.
Yeah.
And he's like, let's just get something done then. And we sat there right there on the phone and
hammered it out
and went to bed and it was done.
Yeah.
So,
you know what I like about Tony? And cause same thing, when I first met him, gosh, 2.5 years ago now, whatever it was, he's like, yeah, I met you here. And you're like, oh, yeah, I vaguely remember that. But the thing about him is that not only is he an encyclopedia, he's very smart about wrestling, he also does this for a living, put together teams.
Right.
He did it with Jacksonville. Obviously, he's not the be-all, end-all, but he has a lot of say in it. He put together the entire roster at the Fulham Football Club that went from the minor league to the Premier League, which made, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars. Putting together the AEW roster, he has a great crew of, like any great football team or hockey team, veterans, like veterans that have won Stanley Cups and have been there. He's got the guys that are scoring 50 goals a year at the peak of their career. He's got the guys just underneath that are ready. He's got the rookies, and he's got the great minor league system ready to pull guys. He's really built that well. Mm. And when people originally would say, he's just a money marker, he's not that
he's not,
at all.
He's not a pushover at all.
He's not a pushover.
If you sit and have a conversation with this guy, with Tony,
yeah,
he'll tell you exactly what he wants.
Yeah.
You know? And you can have a conversation with him, but at the end of the day, the decision's his.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And I like that because, yeah. I mean, we come from a place where it's the same, where Vince is the boss, what he says goes. Mm. And that's all that matters. They're completely different types of bosses.
Right.
But the leadership is the same. There's no arguing.
Right.
If Tony likes it, let's do it. If he doesn't, think of something else.
Right.
A wrestling company needs that.
Yeah.
And I think originally in AEW, when the mindset was more of like, oh, it's going to be the EVPs and all this stuff, it was kind of watered down a bit. And all the guys will tell you, hey, we'd rather have Tony as the boss. Then you don't have to worry about it.
Right.
You know, what his vision is goes.
Yeah. Yeah. And like I said, you know, I just liked him as a person from that first conversation, and I knew that I liked him from the years when we'd met before. But obviously, it's a different situation now. This guy's potentially going to be my boss, but there needed to be the right fit for me at this point in time. And I felt that this was I honestly felt AEW was the best fit for me.
How excited were you when it's the pay-per-view reveal? It's going to be this guy. Tony says one of my favorite wrestlers of all time, which I thought was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Was that a nerve-wracking thing, or were you just ready to go?
Yeah, I mean, I was, and you know, we had some discussions about how it was going to go down, and when he and I had talked, we kind of had talked about it being a surprise and having that kind of element of just, you know, kind of showing up and surprising everyone and doing it that way. And you know, it's funny on the Wednesday on Dynamite when Big Show made that announcement, I wasn't signed yet.
Oh,
like we had talked about it, but it actually wasn't physically signed the deal at that point in time. So, but like we just talked about, you know, there's benefits of doing it both ways. At the end of the day, Tony's a promoter, and he has to promote his pay-per-view coming up. So I get it, and that why he went the direction that he did. All I can do is trust Tony's vision and what he wanted. And Tony is a very passionate guy about every single performer on his roster.
Absolutely,
he cares about every single person. So he's not going to try to put anybody in a bad spot coming in by any means. So I trust his vision, and this is what it's, but like, you know, people, like, I know there was a little bit of kind of like, oh, you know, the surprise and this and that.
Oh, it wasn't The Rock.
Yeah, it wasn't The Rock, or it wasn't Goldberg, or
I like that one. It's going to be The Rock.
Or whatever, but and here's the thing too, right?
John Cena.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's any secret that wrestling fans are very opinionated, and when you light a spark, it turns into a wildfire, right? No matter what. So it doesn't matter who showed up, there was going to be people that were disappointed or whatever. Mm-hmm. When you make that kind of announcement, you're giving people the option to pick who they think it should be or who they want it to be, or those sorts of things. So at the end of the day, I don't care, because I know once I get in the ring what I'm going to do.
Sure.
And so
I thought it was cool too, because I know when we had Sting was a surprise.
Right.
And the network was like, don't do that again. We want.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and that's why Paul White was announced.
Oh, wow! I didn't know that.
Social media, because
there you go.
Because TNT said we don't want surprises. We want to take advantage of the rating. So I think we had a big surprise. Then we had a big announcement, and then we used that big announcement to announce the next big surprise.
Yeah.
So I think, you know what I mean. I think that's one of the reasons too, to kind of spread it out a bit as well. So when you get to AEW, you have a couple promos and. I always like asking people this, and obviously you're very new to the company, but it's been 6 weeks or like 3 or 4 tapings now.
Yeah.
What were some of the differences that you noticed kind of on a backstage level?
Well, obviously it feels like WWE has their way of doing things, and it works.
Absolutely.
For them. It's great.
We agree with that.
And I've been there for years, and I'll have nothing bad to say about my time there or what WWE has done for me or put me in the position to do. But it seemed less hectic to me and less frantic in a sense. And there was, I felt like the talent were more sure of themselves as performers and what they were going to do. Mm-hmm. That was my initial thought. And obviously it's a very young roster and, with a lot of thirst for knowledge. I really, really felt that there was a real thirst for knowledge. And I didn't even think about it, 'cause when I first got there that night, I got there very late on the first night. Like, I showed up, the pay-per-view had already started. I went on a bus and I was sitting there and Cody was in there and we were talking, and he just goes, hey man, this is a big deal that you're here.
Yeah. which it was.
And
it
I was like, and I was like, oh, thanks, man. I appreciate it. He goes, no, he goes, not just for the fans, but for everybody in the back here. He's like, you and I, you know, we grew up on Hogan, on Macho Man, on, you know, all the, those superstars like that. He goes, everybody back here grew up on you.
That's right.
They grew up on Jericho. they grew up, you know, so this is a big deal. When you walk through there, watch their jaws drop. Yeah. That's what's going to happen. And I was like, man, I didn't really think about it like that. And that it's humbling. You know, it really is. So it was a cool moment.
It's just as a quick segue, hold that thought. Even for us, like I remember one night we were wrestling. It was one of the tape shows. And Jake the Snake was out there watching my match.
Right.
And I was like, this is cool.
Yeah.
Like Jake the Snake is watching me work. And he's like, you know, after he's like, you did a really good job. So I understand what he's saying.
Right.
Because he's right.
Yeah.
You know, we still always have the magic of Jake the Snake being there.
Yeah.
Is what we feel like, is what those guys might feel like to see you.
Yeah, I remember we were doing a show in Vegas once, and Nick Bockwinkel walked up to me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he was like, he said, I'm a really big fan, and I love your promos.
I'm a really big fan of yours, and that voice.
And I'm like, just floored. Like, I was a huge Nick Bockwinkel fan.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my God. I was like, you don't have any idea how much that means to me that you said that. I was like, I actually feel like I've patterned some of my promo style like after you.
Sure.
He was a guy that in the era of yelling and screaming your promos, he spoke intelligently.
Yeah,
he spoke kind of down to you, which is how he got his heat. And I appreciate that about him. He didn't need to yell and scream to get his point across. So when I had that, and he was like, oh yeah, he goes, sometimes I would use words and wouldn't even, you know, big words, I didn't even know what they meant. But he was a great guy, and that was like one of those kind of cool moments.
Yeah, same
too.
Idea, right?
Yeah.
When you are walking around backstage, because like you said, it's interesting because I think people get more of a chance to be themselves.
Right.
You know, I remember my first promo, and it was actually in Daly's place. Mm-hmm. We had a live fight TV, whatever, Fight for the Fallen or whatever we called it. And I had a promo where the Hangman and I were going to get in a fight afterwards, and I was like, okay, this is it. People say you're a good promo. You think you're a good promo.
Prove it.
There's now no script anymore. For the first time in 20 years on TV, you're going to go out there with basically nothing.
Yeah.
What do you got? And afterwards, I was like, that was really good.
It was fun, right?
It was very fun. How was that for you the first? Because you had a couple backstage promos. And
yeah.
Stuff. I'm assuming there's no script given to you whatsoever.
Yeah. And then there was actually not even any real like direction. Yeah. So it was, and I felt like strongly just kind of almost like a mission statement, you know? And that's just kind of how I looked at it. And I knew that the first Dynamite that I did where I came out and kind of had that moment with Kenny, I felt like if I said something after, it might take away from that moment because that was a pretty cool effing moment. I don't know if I can say the F word on
it's,
this.
It's
but
a,
I dropped
a dream match per se, right?
So it was like, to me, you know, even though like obviously it's too soon to go there and I understand that how it works in AEW and I appreciate the fact that the rankings mean something and matter and so I wanted to make sure that I referenced Kenny and that, hey, I'll see you at some point, but I know that I have to get wins.
Right.
And to me, so I wanted to kind of make it like my mission statement as to why I was here, what was, you know, what I was going to bring to the table and all those sorts of things. So it obviously was, it was fun. It was fun to be able to do that. And like I said, I thought that moment with Kenny on Dynamite was really, really a cool moment. And another thing that I thought was really cool is when I debuted at the pay-per-view, I probably had about three times the amount of texts than I did when I returned from the Rumble.
Wow.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yep.
Yeah.
So,
you know, I think that happened with the show when Paul White was announced, he had 3, 4, 5 times the amount of press than if he would have just come back to WWE.
So right.
Because you're making a statement.
Right.
And it's one of those things too. It's another huge indication that our company is gaining ground. And
right.
People see that. I had so many, oh gosh, Big Show's with you guys now. Chris is with you guys now. You guys are getting huge. Because the perception is the reality. You know?
Right. Yeah. And I like too that this company stays the course for where we're going.
Right.
You know? Don't worry about what's happening on the other side. We know where we're headed to.
That's right.
And stay on course. I really appreciate that.
So where did you come up with the thought process of being the workhorse and outwork everyone and that whole gimmick?
Yeah. So I don't think that the workhorse thing is necessarily going to use it as a nickname or anything. I just wanted to kind of reiterate that, hey, I'm not coming here to do a greatest hits. Hit a couple moves that you know, hold my hand up over my eyes, look for my peeps, and call it a night.
Right.
I'm coming in here to do some of the best work that I've ever done. And I've been known as a workhorse in the past, and that's a guy or a girl that goes out there, no matter what situation you're in, win or lose, you bust your ass, night in, night out, no matter what. And that's kind of just the like you're kind of going out there with a chip on your shoulder, something to prove. To me, that's the definition of a workhorse, and I just kind of wanted to let everyone know I'm coming in here to do this work.
But you also have a talent to have a good match with anybody.
Yeah.
And when I say that, I'm thinking Mark Henry before the light bulb went on for Mark. Did you even have a good match with Khali once that I thought was good?
Yeah.
Like anybody, yeah. You put him in there with
yeah,
him.
Yeah, I had a kind of a really good match with Yoshitatsu on ECW. We had like a two or three segment match.
Guys that aren't known for having barn burns.
Yeah, so TJ Tyson Kidd used to call me the magician.
Yeah.
And whenever I come back, he goes, the magician did it again.
So, that kind of all fits in with that though, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So that's, like I said, it's not something I was trying to hang my hat on or anything, but I wanted to kind of make it known, like, I'm not coming in here to just skate by on my name and what I've done in the past.
In our company, you can't do that.
But my pride won't allow me to do that. Right. You know what I mean? And that was also like, this first match with Frank Kazarian, like
great match, by the way.
Thanks, man. I really and I wanted to go out there and put some time in and have a match, a real match, you know, and just kind of remind people what I can do and what I'm going to bring to the table, and hopefully that was accomplished.
Well, it definitely was the right guy, and like we were talking about earlier, in our company, the first segment usually goes about 18, 19 minutes, and there's always a match. We rarely have a promo opening, and that match is known as kind of one of the highlights of the show. So to put you on in that segment, you know, it just happened a couple nights ago when we aired this, I would assume and almost guarantee that it's going to do a great rating because people are going to want to see that, and you deliver with a great match.
Yeah, I mean, you just try to control what you can control.
Yeah,
and when you step through those ropes, I can control everything that happens there. And I feel like, and the funny thing is too, with this match, you know, we're talking about, you know, come back with the Rumble. It was same sort of situation. I still hadn't had a singles match.
Exactly.
And you know, I'd been in the ring a couple times since then. I'm complete transparency here. I've been in the ring three times between Rumble and that singles match. The first time I got in for a half hour, hit the ropes, took some bumps. Second time, ran some, you know, did a few spots, you know, same thing, took some bumps, did a couple blow-up drills. The third time I was in the ring about 2 hours.
It's not the same, though.
But it's not the same as going in. It's not the same as going in and having a match.
And once again, now we have, because it was a tape show, so now you're out there with just the people in the front row, you know, our talent in the front row. Mm. How was that for you, working with nothing?
It was fine because I felt like they were
loud.
I felt like they got like super into the match. Yeah. And, you know, I didn't realize this after either, but, you know, Justin Roberts texted me with some nice comments about the match and that. And he said, what you couldn't see is that people were coming out of the back to watch it through the curtain live.
Oh yeah. Which it was a curtain sellout.
So that's pretty humbling and pretty cool.
Yeah, I was in the back watching. So. We were supposed to be filming some stuff. Like, where's Jericho? I'm like, I'm watching Christian's match. I didn't get to see the finish.
So bearing me like, he's the shit. Yeah,
right, I was sitting right in front of Tony.
Yeah.
Ixnay on the Rich Chin K. Your first AEW Dynamite match was last Wednesday against Frankie Kazarian. Did you handpick Frankie? Because the match was awesome.
It was funny because I kind of had him in my head. Obviously, Frankie and I are close friends.
Yeah.
And we go back a lot of years. We'd had a couple good matches in TNA. And I've always felt like Frankie was an underutilized guy and never really got his just desserts, you know? And to me, I wanted to have one of those matches where it didn't really matter who won or lost. Both guys came out looking better. And to me, there's also that trust factor there where I knew that if he knew that this match against me, he'd be extra motivated. It motivated me also, obviously, for the reasons of coming back after not having a match for over 7 years. I was instantly motivated, but then, you know, wanting to step up and not let anybody down and to prove Tony that, you know, listen, like, I'll get to it in a second, but I had Frankie forefront in my mind. And when I called Tony, and I said, and we talked about it, I was like, I'm talking about outworking everyone. The work's got to start here pretty soon.
Yeah,
and
that's right.
So we decided that we would do something to set the match up, and then we'd have the match to gain a little interest in it. And the first person that he said was, what do you think about Frankie Kazarian? Mm. And I was like, I was thinking that too. Obviously, we had batted a couple other names, and then it came back to Frankie, and then I let it marinate for a couple days, and I texted him. I said, you're right from the start.
That's
the guy. He's the guy.
Yeah.
And he just sent me back like a heart. Like
he's a big,
yeah.
Art guy. Yeah.
Yeah. So
remember when Vince would type back K or check CK check. Tony does the heart.
Yeah. So, and then I didn't even talk to Frankie in between. I showed up that day and it was on,
yeah.
You know? So it was pretty cool. But like, you know, after the match, it was very emotional for me, you know, to do that match. Like there's a lot of emotion. Like, shit, am I really doing this? Mm-hmm. Like, but then I start going back to, you know, all the time of uncertainty, and you know, even just knowing that my health was good was important for me.
Sure.
You know,
that's important.
Let's put the getting back in the ring to the side. That I was going to be healthy for my life was a huge revelation as well. It was great. It was awesome to hear that. And so getting the physical transformation to get back into my body right, and then being able to step in there and have this match, a real match, a long match, and a competitive match. And I'm my own worst critic, so I won't say anything more about it than that. But like, I remember going back and just having these emotions, people coming up saying congratulations, and you know, it was very cool to have everybody kind of say their piece after. And Tony was sitting there, and he was the first person that was waiting for me when I came back through the curtain. But then I doubled back to him, and I just kind of said to him quietly, I said, Tony, I said, like, you signed me basically sight unseen.
Yeah.
You have no idea how much that means to me and how hard I will work for you going forward because of that, of the chance you took on me. And he got up and he hugged me, and that was it.
Yeah.
And that was it.
So, you know, it's what I was really proud of, and I've been in the, I never stopped, right? So I morphed my style,
right,
using stuff that I learned 90s, 2000s to what's going on now, right? And you didn't do that because you haven't been around for 7 years, but your style, which I mean, obviously you could, I loved, because nobody wrestles like you on our show.
Mm.
And that's important. Like, you didn't have that 7 year period where you're still thinking like the guys do now. And I combine the two, which works.
Mm-hmm.
But I love just watching this going, this is great. No dives, not a lot of high spots, but just great wrestling match. Mm-hmm. Like that's something I think, like, you bring that to the table because you're almost like a time traveler, and you understand what I mean. Not like in a outdated way, your style from, let's say, 2014, from 94 to 14, fits in so great in 2021 because nobody does it.
Right. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And I feel like I could do the things that are.
Of course you could.
And I will. But
your style from that makes it completely different, which is another reason why it's perfect for our show, because we do kind of have a buffet of styles.
Right. Yeah. And I think that like my style is, and especially at this stage in my career and life, and sitting back and having the luxury of watching how everything goes at this point for 7 years. I watch everything. I'm still a fan.
Yeah.
I watch AW religiously. I watch WWE. I watch everything.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, we're going to lock up. That lockup is going to mean something.
Yeah.
And it's going to go from there.
Yeah.
Nothing is going to be wasted. Everything is going to mean something. And that's the mindset that I have. And that's what I'm going to carry with me. And like I said, if it's something as simple as a lockup, that lockup's going to mean a whole lot.
But isn't that the way it used to be? That's the way we were trained. The lockup is everything.
Right.
The lockup is the most important part of the match.
Yeah, because you're getting them hooked right there.
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
This is real. This is legit. These guys mean business, you know?
How is it for you? And it's actually really cool. When Don started coming, me Don, and
Manny
went and hung out for a bit. And it's like, crazy, it's the first time in, like, you know, 25 years we're in a locker room, and now you're here. So it's like, it's Jay, it's Don, it's Lenny, it's Chris. It's kind of cool. Like, we did it, you know, after all these years. Now here we are, all of us contributing. Like, freaking Lenny did it again and reinvented himself. Here we're all contributing in different ways, but contributing to this brand new company after sitting in a dressing room in Morden or
Manitoba. And you think, too, the funny thing is for me is, like, you know, coming in this situation. And when I first met Lenny and Don, they were somewhat established as far as Lenny going to Japan.
Yeah.
And Don was obviously
the
Booker. Premier of Manitoba, basically. You know, he ran the entire province. But Yeah, but he basically ran the promotion and those sorts of things. So I was kind of coming in as a young guy with like 4 or 5 matches under his belt and like just wanted to learn and get some matches and things like that. And like, it's the green guy. And, but now it's like, it's so funny. And then, you know, going on to do what I'd done and then, you know, running into Lenny here and there, you know, when he was living out west and stuff like that, you'd see him here and there at shows. And then, but to really get to talk to him now and hang out with him is special to me because like, you know, you almost lose touch and like almost forget how much he meant to me. Even as a mentor early on, like, because I was in a little group with him, and it was like the first chance I really got to do a little tour, do a little thing on their local TV, and that was a big deal.
Yeah,
4 or 5 matches into your career to be with a guy that had been wrestling in Japan regularly and has traveled all over and was, you know, kind of a journeyman performer, but like a guy that has had built up all this knowledge and internationally, and for him to kind of take me in. And I remember talking to him and like sitting in with him when he was putting matches together and things like that. And then we became like kind of fast friends that way. It does mean a lot to me to be able to kind of share this locker room with him at this stage too, because he finally, like, he's one of those guys that kind of unlucky his whole career. And now he's finally got this. And that's, I'm so happy for him and proud of him for that, you know?
And there's a couple guys like Eddie Kingston's another
one. Yeah, I love Eddie Kingston, man. He's great.
Blade, Pepper Parks. I mean, these guys have been around for 20-odd years and never signed a national.
Yeah.
I'd never even heard of Eddie Kingston. And it, not because I didn't. I just never ran into his name.
Yeah.
And then I see this guy. I'm like, where the f*** has this guy been?
Yeah.
He's great.
Yeah.
Like, I start seeing, like, oh, this is money, Jericho and Kingston. Or,
but you know what I love about a guy like Eddie Kingston, too? That, like, this is a guy that the business is basically, you know, was done with.
Yeah.
And he forced his way back in.
That's right.
And I have so much respect for that. And the fact that he still has this thirst for wanting to learn, and like, this, he's been in the business, I don't know, almost as long as us. I don't know exactly how long,
it's, but it's over
been
20
a,
years,
been a long
think,
time.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's coming up to me to me and saying, hey, did you see anything? Or
right,
what can I do? If you ever see anything, just let me know. Like, and he's a guy that you legit know he means it.
Yeah.
Whereas it's not just lip service, like, oh, I'll go ask the
The,
you know, but
meanwhile, you'll say the same to him and mean it. Like, hey, anything I can do.
Yeah. So, and like, he doesn't want anything sugarcoated, and I appreciate that about him too. But man, like, man, I just, that guy's passion. I just love that guy's passion. Yeah. And I like being, there's something about him. He has this like kind of, and when I didn't know him and saw him on TV, you don't know, because you don't know.
Yeah.
Right. But then when you get around, I was like, I like having this guy around.
Me too.
Like, I like having him around. He's always in a good mood. And
that's why when I first started, I said, dude, you're my new favorite person.
Yeah.
Where have you been all my life?
Yeah, I like him a lot. I really do.
As we start to wind down, you and I have had such a huge history.
Yeah.
It's funny because there's so many things and moments that we had. But the one that people talk about all the time that, I don't know, I don't know if I've watched it much or just didn't even think about it because we do so much stuff, is WrestleMania 20.
Yeah.
Christian versus Jericho,
right.
WrestleMania 20. They talk about it like it's a classic, and I always remember it being good, but have you watched it recently? Does it hold up? Have you ever watched it?
I've watched it, but I would say it's probably been 10 years since.
People love that match.
Yeah. I mean, I still see clips of it and people talking about it, same thing. And I think it was just, more than anything, there was a good story to kind of to latch onto, which made the match more appealing. And obviously, you know, we have a chemistry and with each other as a team and as opponents, we always had that.
Mm-hmm.
And I always say this too, like, Adam and I had crazy chemistry to know where the other one was at all times, just because we had that
as a team.
And, as a team, the only other person I ever had that with was you,
right?
When we did our tag team thing, and I was like, wow, this is the closest I've ever had to the Edge and Christian thing, and I don't think it'll ever be like that again. And it wasn't, like, no matter who I team with, like, that was the closest thing. We kind of were always on the same page, you know? And it was like one of those things too, like, if you were doing something else, like, hey, put this together, blah, 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 because we're always kind of thinking along the same lines, right?
Yeah.
So now I forgot what we're talking about.
We're just talking about just the WrestleMania 20 and kind of our past.
So I haven't, but I like, you know, when it's good, right? And like, man, maybe we should do a watch along that match for your podcast.
Idea. We should do a watch along of that. Because like you said, it's funny because another thing too, which is rare as well, is that we were really good tag team. We were really good opponents too.
Yeah.
For example, like with Adam and you, I don't know if you ever really wrestled each other much. When you did, it's because you were so locked in. I don't know if it was the same.
But I didn't wrestle Adam that much.
So there you go. So we had like both sides of the coin.
When we broke up, we had a couple matches. And then we had a match later on, years later, on Raw. And then it was like, man, we should have done this a lot more.
Yeah.
Especially at that stage when both of us had kind of gotten away from each other and had all this separate knowledge and experience that we got in there, and it was just like, whoa, man, we're so much better than we used to be last time we did this.
We thought we were good.
Yeah. And it was like, so it's a shame that it never got a chance to go beyond that. But
let's talk about the story. It's one of my all time favorites when we went to India.
Yeah.
And we come back from India and Vince wants us to do something entertaining. the Dudleys are supposed to steal. Actually, it wasn't the Dudleys. It was Booker
and Goldust.
And Goldust that were supposed to steal our clothes.
Right.
So tell what you remember.
We get back like this crazy, like not a word of a lie here. Just the worst travel day you'd ever.
Terrible. And just a crazy, not the worst trip, but it wasn't a great trip.
It was not a great trip. Yeah. It was not a great trip. So we get back and I remember landing in Frankfurt as our layover, which is another 8-9 hour flight after that, by the way. And that was like the halfway point. I remember getting off that plane and everybody just rushed to McDonald's to get some sort of like, food. So then we jump on the flight. I think we're in Charleston or something.
Yeah,
like
Charleston,
that.
South Carolina.
So we get there late at night and we get there and we have this text from Brian saying,
Yeah,
Vince wants something entertaining tomorrow and this is the deal. And we're like, man, okay. So we're like basically the threat of the entire show. So we go out there and I think we were going to do a match, screw them over. They were going to end up stealing our clothes and this whole chase was going on and like however the end the towels got pulled off.
Yeah, that's right.
So then we're standing there, the show's live at 8 o'clock or nine, whatever time it was, but it was literally 30 minutes before we go live, you and I are standing in the hall and all of a sudden Booker gets wheeled past us on a stretcher with like an IV in him and we're like, what? And they're like, yeah, he just got like super dehydrated from like the trip and like came down with something and like they were taking him to get looked at. Like he was not in a good way. So then I think the Dudleys had wrestled on the Velocity or whatever the show was they taped beforehand and they were putting the Dudleys in their place and now we had like 25 minutes to get this whole like 2 or 3 segment match down and then like the whole thing. So like we're sitting in a room and we're all just kind of throwing ideas around. I remember you just getting up and yelling, okay, everybody just relax. Down. Everybody just calm down. And we're all just sitting there calm. And we all look at you like, we're all pretty good here, Chris. You're like, okay. So we just kind of were like, let's just put a finish together and just call it out there and see what happens. And that's what we did. And it was like, from what I remember, it was
good. So then they steal our clothes.
And they stole our clothes, yep.
And earlier in the day is when we go through, you know, they're going to steal our gear bags and what's in the gear bags. And there's, you know, and Vince is like, we're going to have women's lingerie in there. I'm like, what? So like now we're cross dressers? Well, it's funny. How is it funny to have random lingerie in our bags?
Yeah. And then Brian came up with the idea to have ass cream, which was a great call.
What exactly is ass cream and what do you do with it, might I ask?
Yeah.
But here's the best part. And I'm still convinced to this day that you were going to go for it because you're such a good company man. Vince wanted us to go out to the ring wearing towels because all of our gear is stolen. So the whole show, we're walking around in towels trying to find out where our stuff is. Mm-hmm. And we go to the ring where Bubba's got the stuff with the ass cream and Spike comes from behind and pulls our towels off.
Yeah.
Right? And Vince wanted us to be completely naked.
Right. Yeah. And then I was like, oh, yeah, okay. And Chris was like, no, we're not doing it.
So you're going to go for that?
Well, you better go in and talk to him then.
Yeah, Michael Hayes is like, I heard you don't like something. I'm like, you're f***ing right, so I don't like something. So Vince goes, yeah, I heard you don't like something, pal. He's super nice. I'm like, you can't have us standing there naked.
Right.
I mean, there's little kids out there. He's like, what do you suggest we do? I'm like, I don't know. Give us nylon G-strings.
So we had skin color thongs on.
Put the little distortion thing over our dicks or something. Yeah, yeah. He literally wants us to be naked on stage.
Yeah, and then... So then, we end up with the skin-colored thongs and the pixelation. And then we did something. We did the whole thread. And there was at one point, too, where I remember we were backstage and I was carrying a towel in my hand as well as the one wearing around the waist. And I threw it or something.
Yeah.
And you thought it fell off on the live bit. And you were like, you looked down at it because you didn't realize I had one in my hand.
What I remember is when he stole the towels that I ran off stage and you got lost behind the stage.
I went behind the thing and they got my silhouette.
Silhouette.
And I didn't know where to go.
Bath hat on, like the big bath cap.
Yeah, the bath cap. That was like my only request was like, hey, we'll get, that's fine. I just want a bath cap. Just, it's so ridiculous, right? I just want to have a bath cap on. It's
like, Oh, man. But that's the thing with that chemistry. You could do, you know, serious or tough or either way, whichever way it was. Right? Yeah. Just to kind of finish up with WWE, I mean, you grew up in Ontario, huge WWE fan. And then there's a time when you become the WWE champion.
Yeah.
I would say that that's like not overachieving because you obviously are good enough to do it and deserve it to an extent. Actually, no one deserves anything. You worked your ass off and got it. But did you ever think like, holy shit? Because when Vince saw you originally, creepy little bastard, not exactly his view of what a world champion, nor was I. I always took great pride in the fact that I did it against all odds, so to speak.
Right. No, and I did overachieve.
Yeah.
And I take a lot of pride in overachieving, you know, because I had a lot. I willed myself into those spots. And they weren't going to be handed to me or given to me, but you kind of have to give it, get to the point where you don't really give them a choice.
Right.
You know, and
you can't deny it.
When I ended up doing the, you know, obviously timing is everything as well. Adam got injured, was going to retire. The feel-good thing to do was to have me beat Del Rio. I get it. But also, everything I'd done up to that point, if it didn't stand up, it wouldn't even be a consideration.
That's
right. So I was all the things that I was doing was equity towards that moment. And this is the situation. You make the best of it. And then I went in and I had the best feud I've ever had in my entire career against Randy and proved that I deserved to be on that level, in my opinion. And that can never be taken away. I willed myself to that spot. I believe it. And I, like I said, I take a lot of pride in overachieving because I definitely 100% did that. And I was never supposed to be in those positions that I was in. And I got myself to them by sheer will and working my ass off and being, like I said earlier, that workhorse going in there every night. Like I had a saying in my head and I legit said this to myself every day I walked into the arena for a WWE show, whether it was a live event or TV or pay-per-view. In my head, I get out of my car, I grab my bags, and I would say to myself, today they're going to know how good I am. And I'd walk through the doors. That's the mindset that I carried. So, yeah, and it's funny because when I meet people, a lot of people say, oh, man, you're so underrated. And I appreciate hearing that, but my response is I'd rather be underrated than overrated.
Right.
So.
Right. Was it hard for you to walk away from WWE? Because I know for a while it was hard for me to fathom that.
Well, I'd already done, I left in 2005, so I kind of knew.
That's true. Good point. That's
so
true.
Like I walked away on my own accord at that point in time. And listen, there's at least on my part, there's no ill will. Mm-hmm. Like, and I don't believe there is on that side either. I needed the best platform for me and what I could bring to the table at this point in time and what I felt I could give back and where I could help the next generation start to level up and start to up their game. And I felt like AEW, and especially after having that conversation with Tony, was the right fit for me. And I needed to take care of me at this point in time in my life.
Last few questions. Who are you looking forward to working with in AEW? Because there's a whole new palette of paint to do your art with.
Yeah. I mean, let's just talk about the young talent. You know, obviously you look at a guy like Darby Allin, who's special. You know, there's awesome, just something about him that has that cool, you don't know what it is, that it factor. Doesn't have to talk if he doesn't want to, but there's something about him that the fans gravitate towards.
Modern day Jeff Hardy.
Right. Obviously, you know him well, MJF. Mm-hmm. The kid just gets it, man.
Yeah.
He just gets it. And he's going to be one of those guys where he talks so well, his ring work is going to have to get to that point where it matches what the things that he says. And I believe he's determined to be that top star, and I look forward to seeing where he's going because I think he just gets it. And I appreciate that about him as well. Yeah, man, I just, like, those two definitely stand out for me.
Excited to lock up with Kenny, another fellow Kenny.
Yeah, obviously, yeah, Kenny, I mean, it goes without saying that he's been kind of universally regarded as top in-ring performer for the last 4 or 5 years, going back to the stuff that you guys did in New Japan and even before that. So, you know, and like we said, talking about my style being different than his style, it's just crazy enough to work.
Yeah.
You know? And but I think that's a really intriguing
He's
match.
Great at morphing his style too.
Right.
You guys
yeah.
have a great match when the time
and
comes.
And it's one of those things where to me that's a real dream match. A match that
I agree.
Like people never thought I was gonna step back in the ring again.
Yeah.
And like did they ever think I was gonna step back in the ring and do this with a guy like Kenny Omega?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? At some point, whenever that does happen. And I think guys like the Young Bucks, obviously, you know, they're obviously Edge and Christian, Hardy Boys fans.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, so be able to do something with them at some point. Would be pretty cool as well. But yeah, there's so much young talent. I know that I'm leaving some people out here, but I can't wait to get in there with all of them and just kind of, you know, help them
just
get started on this journey.
Last question for you. You're starting from scratch, brand new slate. This is Christian, let's say version two. Which is there a favorite match of yours that stands out from 2014 and prior, Christian?
You mean as far as like...
Just one that you really enjoy that sticks out. If I said, what's your favorite match you ever had?
Yeah, I think the... Probably the over-the-limit match against Randy Orton. Mm. Off the top of my head. Because it's so hard to do a babyface match and have people fully invest in it. And I think just the story of Randy beating me after losing, after this culmination of me taking 15, 16 years to win the World Heavyweight Championship and then him beating me 5 days later for it. This was my first opportunity to cash in and get my immediate rematch. And like I said, still babyface at this point in time. And it was in Seattle. And I just remember that building, it was like a soccer stadium. Mm-hmm. Half the arena was chanting for him. Half the arena was chanting for me. And they were on their feet the entire match. And to me, that also makes a great match, takes it to a different level. And I just thought the story we told in that match, the pacing of that match, the emotion of the match, the finish of the match, the stuff we did after the match, like even to the point where I was walking away and the way that they had the camera shot on me, just the look of just being drained at the end of that, like I left it all out there and it still wasn't enough. To me, that the story that was told there, like you could kind of see the switch turning from there, like, okay, now I've got to get a little dirty here to if I'm going to have a chance to win this world title back. And that was kind of the starting point of my heel turn. I just felt like we just told every story and the match backed it up. That, to me, off the top of my head, that's the one right now.
Well, dude, like you said, it's a brand new era for you, and we're glad to have you in AEW. It's going to be awesome.
Thanks, man. Appreciate
it. All right. Right at the sea. Sexy beast. <Yeah. laughs>